Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to be with you today. Our first study comes from the University Cancer Institute in Toulouse in France. And it's very simple. Vitamin C and vitamin D is associated with fewer complications in leukemia patients. This was reported in the peer-reviewed journal Blood Advances, and it found reduced complications from chemotherapy received by adults with acute myeloid leukemia who were given vitamin C and vitamin D. This takes me way back, wow, to 1973. I was on WMCA radio, and the wife of an imprisoned inmate in California, a medical doctor, asked me would I try to help her husband. I said, what's the problem? Well, he helped people with cancer who received chemotherapy and radiation and surgery, and he helped them post-treatment with nutrition to help get back their health, making them less likely to have a relapse. I said, that's good. No, it wasn't good, because the state medical board said if you didn't use currently accepted cancer protocols, then you were a fraud. And she said hundreds of people, patients came and said, we got better. You know, we felt great. We didn't have the after effects. That didn't matter. The judge had to say, it does matter what treatment you gave. If it wasn't chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery, then it's now considered under the statutes a fraud. So reluctantly, the jury, and they were questioned, they didn't want to find him guilty, but the instructions made it that they had no choice. So he went to prison, not just prison. He was on a chain gang. His name was Dr. James Privatira. And when I verified that this was all accurate, we started a campaign to try to get him out, and we did. Now, it took almost 20 years from then, and lots of other doctors lost their license, especially in California and New York, not because they practiced bad medicine, but because they were using non-traditional or non-accepted scientific methods, meaning they were using nutrition or chelation therapy or intravenous vitamin drips. In any case, we finally got a law passed in New York State that allowed a patient and a doctor to use whatever techniques they wanted as long as the patient gave informed consent. Then that spread across the country. The medical industrial complex didn't like that, but it was our freedom of choice movement had begun when it comes to our health and our body and what goes into it. But now just imagine today with this study, a very good study, they say, quote, the majority of patients had low vitamin C and D levels at the time of diagnosis. Patients who received the vitamins were followed for 28 months, and the control group was followed for 58 months. Bacterial infections, bleeding, and immune system inflammation occurred among a respective 27%, and the vitamin group, it was very low. Meaning, if you got the vitamin D and vitamin C, you had very few of these opportunistic infections, meaning your immune system was enhanced. So that was way back in 1973, 50 years ago. Now, we're saying, wow, you mean meditation and yoga and acupuncture can actually help people who are receiving traditional cancer therapies? Yeah. And vitamins also? Yes. This is just a few studies. There are thousands of studies, thousands, in the National Library of Medicine, peer-reviewed, that show that if you're deficient in these, you're more susceptible to cancers of all types. Or if you have cancer and you're deficient, more likely for the cancer to progress, to metastasize, become fatal. So, yeah, the truth was then. It's just being validated today. From the University of Peking in China, the effects of oyster mushrooms on glycemic control. According to news reporting originating from Beijing, the purpose of this study was to investigate the effects of a oyster mushroom on glycemic metabolism. And they took the study and found that, yes, it makes a difference. Now, I'm sure that you've been to farmers markets where they have a mushroom table. And the longest it takes to grow are these shiitake mushrooms, but very medicinal. But they also grow the king mushrooms and the oyster mushrooms. But the oyster mushrooms are delicious. They're very, very gentle. I just wash them, press all the water out of them, and then saute them with a low heat. I use coconut oil, and then after that, I put olive oil on it, and then the seasonings. And they're very good for you. So now there's more proof. If you're diabetic, have oyster mushrooms. Also from Harvard Medical School, they ask a question, is diet to blame for rising cancer rates among younger people? Now, researchers have warned of a rising cancer rate among people under 50 as, quote, an emerging global epidemic. But it's unclear what's causing the increase in cancer diagnosis. In the United States, gastrointestinal cancers, including colorectal, are the fastest growing type of early onset cancers, according to a report published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Network Open. Now, one theory says that diet, specifically a diet high in ultra-processed foods, that's your average American diet, is partly responsible for the increase in cancers related to the digestive system. An unhealthy diet can cause systematic inflammation and insulin resistance and can change gut microbiota, hence increasing the risk of colorectal cancer. So, diet is certainly important, but if you shift it over to a healthy plant-based diet with lots of nuts and seeds, nut butters, and grains and healthy oils, stay away from soybean oil, corn oil, stay away from rapeseed oil, which is not good, and palm oils. Stay away from those. Your good oils, and ideally you get them when you eat the food, avocado oil, almond oil, walnut oil, macadamia oil for cooking, coconut oil, and olive oil, flaxseed oil, hemp seed oil are all good for you. So you can protect that way. But also, I believe that more younger adults are drinking more alcohol than ever before. So alcohol specifically kills brain cells, heart cells, liver cells, and cancer cells, all important in preventing cancer. So get rid of the alcohol, any alcohol in any amount, all right? And get rid of all the ultra-processed foods. Now, from Trinity College, which is in Dublin, breath-focused practices help alleviate symptoms of ADHD and cognitive decline. And finally, anti-aging tricks you can use. And this was from Emory University on mice. Let me explain this. In human cells, shortened telomeres, T-E-L-O-M-E-R-E-S, the protective caps at the end of chromosomes, are both a sign of aging and contribute to it. Scientists at Emory University School of Medicine have found that the dietary supplement alpha lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, acid, ALA, can stimulate telomerase, the enzyme that lengthens telomeres, with positive effects. And at least in this model, it did in atherosclerosis. Why? According to this study, according to the MD, PhD, Dr. Wayne Alexander, professor of medicine, alpha-lipoic acid has an essential role in the mitochondria, the energy-generating elements of the cells. And that's how it works. You can get it in any health food store. It's a natural antioxidant. And it really helps against atherosclerosis by smoothing the muscle cells that surround blood vessels to make a particular type of what is called PGC1. So take alpha-lipoic acid to live a longer life. That's as simple as it gets. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come right back. And go to GaryNoll.com. Have a lot of interesting stuff. Also, I put in here short videos, and I put in articles that I can't always get to on the show. They're in my show notes, and all of my references are in the show notes. So if you miss something or you want more details, just go to prn.live, scroll down to archive, scroll down to Gary Noll Show and show notes, you'll see them. For example, I posted something yesterday I don't know if any of you saw it. I don't know who this person is. He's a judge. And I've now been sent a lot of clips from him. And I wanted to share a clip with you. There's a 96-year-old gentleman in court. And he was going a little too fast in the car. So the judge says, "Why were you going too fast, speeding?" He says, "Well, I was taking my son." How old's your son? 66, who has cancer, to the hospital. There was an emergency. So the judge says, "And how long have you been taking care of your son?" He said, "For about the last 20 years. And the judge says, "Wow, you're a special person. You're a good person." Dismissed. But it turns out that wasn't an exception. He does it all the time with people. He's one of those judges that really want to know the context and the larger story behind why someone's in court. And time again, he has just said, you know, dismissed. We should have more judges like this guy. Watch it. See what you think. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Before we go to some very important clips, just an update. Dr. David Cartland, C-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, from Great Britain, has just given us the latest information as a whistleblower, UK doctor, exposing Pfizer's COVID vaccines causing turbo cancer, something we've never seen before. And he's not the only one. He's just one of the latest to label all this as turbo cancers. And they just did a study, and he was citing the study. It's a Belgium study published on May 1st, 2023, where they used mice and they injected them with two Pfizer COVID modified RNA vaccines. In 2 days, 2 days after the second Pfizer dose, 7% of the mice died. They had turbo cancer with lymphoma, infiltration of their heart, or their liver, kidney, spleen, lungs, and intestines. And yet they were perfectly healthy 2 days before they got the vaccines. And this is the second study which showed the turbo cancers affect injection with a Pfizer vaccine. Quote, "These were the types of studies that Pfizer and Moderna should have performed on mice, but never did." Dr. Cartland points out that this study, quote, "was larger than the study done to approve COVID-19 Omicron RNA booster shots, which were given to hundreds of millions of people," end quote. So, that's important. All right, just more information to show you what you should have known, didn't know, and you've trusted. And I'll get to that a little later on in the program. But now I'm going to show you a series of videos. Some I would agree with, some I disagree with. But I don't have programs on just because I agree with them. I have programs on that allow us to think. And we're not doing enough of that. And we should. A lot more critical thinking and take our time so we can see through something. But here's how you have to listen, at least in my opinion. Listen non-judgmentally and see if what's being said makes sense to you or not. Now, this is an interview where they're interviewing this scientist and clinician, the real reasons that the trans movement is exploding, and indeed it is. And for adults who are trans, fine, I support you, respect your choice. For children, no. There's just too many things that a child does not understand. And now it's just fashionable, you know, to have your child be trans. So we go through these things in America where we lose critical judgment. But this might help explain some of that. Let's go to the clip, please.
I'm quite persuaded by the argument that, and I don't hear many people making this argument, but I'm sort of thinking about more and more, that it is the development of technology that allows people to, you know, transition more effectively, if you like, and to pass more as the other sex and so on, that sort of opened this up. And because of that, we're now in the position they're in. There are other people who go, well, it's the academics in the 60s. And where do you think this comes from?
I think, like all really interesting and strange phenomena, it's a perfect storm. Like, a lot of things arrived at the same point together. I think there probably have always been people who have thought that they would like to be the opposite sex, or that they were meant to be the opposite sex. And we used to know, until we'd forgotten, like how that worked out, like how that happened. And so, you know, in the 70s and 80s, there were these prospective studies where they identified little boys who said ardently that they thought they were meant to be little girls. Mm-hmm. And they followed them into adulthood, and what they were was gay. Because there's a strong, very strong link between being really highly gender nonconforming in childhood, early childhood, and growing up to be gay. So those kids, they look around them. They're not born thinking I was meant to be a girl or I was meant to be a boy. They look around them and they think, why am I so different? Why are people treating me like this? You know, why do I not fit in? Why does my dad drag me out to rugby matches and grab my Barbie doll away from me or whatever, you know? So those kids, they learn from the society that they're in that they should have been the opposite sex. There's always been that. And so some of those kids just grow up and they work out they're gay and that's fine. I mean, I should say it's not all that they're gay, but anyway, it's just like strong statistical link. So there was always that. And then along came medical technology that allowed, you know, some surgeries and so on, quite brutal surgeries and not terribly effective still. But anyway, those surgeries started. Then I do think the academics had something to do with it. You know, there's this whole move since, you know, postmodernism, what they call the postmodern turn, which is when you stop thinking that words describe reality and you start thinking words create reality. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, both of those things are true. Mm-hmm. You know, words do create reality. They start wars. They, you know, they make things happen. But they also describe reality. I can't just say any word means what I like and still live in a world where, you know, trains run and operations are successful and, you know, that sort of thing. So the postmodern turn is like moving away from the reality and towards the words. And then they just get like kind of intoxicated on it and unmoored from anything. And then along comes the internet. And I would say that's the last of the pieces I would pick out, that, you know, in an internet world, in an online world, you forget that you're actually a physical being very easily. Like, you live through your avatar, you see people on screens, you're not doing manual labor. You know, we've delayed childbearing, people have fewer children, lots of people have no children. You just can actually pretend much more successfully that men and women are just more similar than they are. So yeah, I mean, that's not all of it by any means. Buy the book if you want to know the whole story. But, it, you know, those are the bits I'd pick out to get us where we are, where we say that there's no difference between men and women, or that men and women are arbitrary categories that we can redefine as we wish.
But Helen, there's also as well several strands to this, because the people, or normally men who transition later on in life, are very different, like we say, to young boys who want to transition, but also the young girls who will then want to transition to be boys. That's a completely different thing entirely as well, isn't it?
Men and women are different and their motivations for wanting to be the opposite sex are very different too. And then sexualities are different. Most people are straight. A few people are gay. Some people are, you know, on a spectrum of bisexuality in between. So those people are going to have different motivations as well. And you see, it's funny how you see the differences between men and women more clearly when you look at men and women who don't want to be men and women. So, I mean, by and large, the women who transition are lesbian, if they're adults, or they're teenage girls who are going through adolescence and finding it tough. Adolescence always is tough. But for girls, you know, there's a whole, you know, it's earlier than it used to be. You may be 11 when men start gawping at your tits and, you know, it's not very pleasant and you think life would be easier as a boy. And then you look online and you say, why do I feel so uncomfortable with my body? Why do I feel uncomfortable being me? And the answer you'll get is trans. Now, that wasn't true 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you got better advice. But now the advice is, if you think you may be trans, you probably are. So that's that bunch. And then the little boys, I mean, they're very effeminate little boys, and there's still a lot of homophobia out there. You know, there really are people who look at a little boy in a dress who says that his favourite toy is a Barbie doll and think, we'll see about that. And then the adult men, I mean, you know, the fact is probably 3-5% of men are erotic cross-dressers. Like, we knew that, you know, those surveys were done before this latest pretense that men can be women. They find this an erotic idea, to be a woman, to inhabit the role of a woman. You know, you would have kept that at the weekend and cross-dressing parties, maybe, you know, between you and your wife 20 years ago. Now you're stunning and brave and out that lady comes and you get, you know, you get societal plaudits for what is actually just an erotic interest.
So are you saying that that some men, or a lot of men who transition later on in life, it's an erotic thing for them? It's a fetish almost?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you can see that. If you look, if you actually look at the, you know, the chat rooms and the Reddit, the subreddits and so on, clearly it is. I mean, they're not dressing in dowdy women's clothes. They're not heading, you know, they're not putting on t-shirt and jeans and heading out to, you know, pick up the shopping and the kid from nursery or something. It's very sexualized. It's all about heels and lipstick and, you know, yeah. I mean, it's just quite obvious once you stop thinking that it's an identity and start thinking, like, what's your motivation here, mate?
Okay. Again, you can agree or disagree, but she's giving her view, working with them, people of a full spectrum of sexual identities, something to think about. I want to go now to one person who has been targeted repeatedly to be attacked by the European Union members. And when she frequently speaks, you see her speaking with no one else in there. Why? Why do all these other people not want to hear what she has to say? Because in my opinion, she is one of the very few people in the European Union willing to say the truth. Her name is Claire Daly. In my opinion, she is one of the most important and valued voices in the world today. This is short, but she was just insulted by a member of the European Union, and she's responding to it. The person sitting down the aisle from her asked her how much money she's getting from Putin, you know, to be a pro-Putin puppet. Well, she's not a pro-Putin puppet. You know, she's no one's puppet. Here's her response.
Hello, everybody. This is Pascal from Neutrality Studies, here with the fifth installment of the Monthly Daily for the month of May. And oh boy, did Claire not have it when she got accused of being a Putin puppet.
Sorry, President, I am sorry, but the colleague here has just asked me how much money I receive from Putin, which I find highly unacceptable and outrageous, and I'd like that remark withdrawn. It's implying bribery and corruption, which clearly I have never been party to, so could you please clarify your remark?
This is a question.
Withdraw it.
This is a question you answer.
You asked me how much money I got from Putin.
Zero.
What do you think? It's an outrageous violation and undermining of a legitimate point of view.
You're as authoritarian
as your reactionary friends you give out about. You're a disgrace.
Excuse me.
You're a disgrace. You're just as bad as them.
Colleague Daly.
Good for you, Claire Daly. Speak up. Now, this is a... this is interesting. This is Professor Victor David Hansen, who I agree on some issues and disagree on others. But listen to what he's saying here, and then see if you listen with neutrality, see if you can find any truth in what he's saying. But let me give you my truth before that. I'd like all the people in this audience, we have a full spectrum of people, all religions and ethnicities and ages listening right now, and have for a long time. When was the last time that you were asked by the unelected rulers your opinion on what should be the objective? What would be the solutions to ending poverty and crime and disease and recreating positive relationships with our adversaries, countries that we have overthrown and exploited their resources? Oh, I forgot. You haven't been invited. I haven't been invited. And we never will, because we're in a subclass. We're a very classist society. People try to make it not terribly bright people either, and I'm sorry for them. But they only see things by what they're told to see. They can't see the full picture. So everything is race. Well, it's not. And that also denies all the progress made in being able to give rights to people who were at one time unfairly subjugated and subject to these racist concepts within different industries or among people. But how about this? How about the people who are considered worthless and useless and who are denigrated? Now, who might they be? Well, let's just give some examples. Now, mind you, these are the people whose opinions are never asked, never requested, and yet think of what they do and the percentage of them. We're told by the Davos group, and that's who we're talking about, the rich and elite, none of them elected, they self-select. If you're famous in a given area, like Leonardo DiCaprio, come on in, and Bono, come on in. And suddenly they're supposed to be brilliant, and they're not. I'm not saying they're stupid, but I'm saying that it's very tempting to be invited into an exclusive club where no one else is allowed, only about 5,000 to 10,000 people. And it's the same people over and over again. The people like Larry Singer, the former Secretary of the Treasury and the man who went into Russia and virtually mismanaged this entire recovery when it gave up the Soviet Union and the people suffered tremendously. Almost every person that's a member of Davos, I can give you a background check on. Who sits on the board of Davos? Well, the man who controls BlackRock, the most powerful asset manager in the world. Why is he there? What's he done to make it a better world for anybody except those that he controls? Here's who are not invited, and how important are they? The people that build your roofs, 90% are men. The loggers that log so that you can have wood, tables for your trusses in your house, 93% are men. Veterans who fight their wars but don't create their wars, 90% are men. The plumber that goes through the nasty task of, you know, helping you clean out a clogged septic system or fix your drains or hooks up your washer and dryer, 90% are men. The mechanic that fixes your car, tractor, and anything else that breaks, 92% are men. The carpenter that builds everything, 92% are men. The coal miner, dirty job, lower life expectancy, black lung, 94% are men. The firefighter that risks their lives to save your life, 95% are men. The iron worker, that you wouldn't have bridges, you wouldn't have buildings without them, 92% are men. The truck drivers that deliver everything that we use, 80% are men. The oil rig worker, 91% are men. The police officers, 85% are men. And there's 900,000 of them. How many do you think we don't need? Well, it depends upon your ideology. There's a lot of people who believe we shouldn't have police officers at all. Okay. Well, what is happening now in Minnesota, in St. Louis, in Washington, D.C., in Baltimore, in New York City, in San Francisco, and at least 20 other cities, when you got rid of the police? And are all police corrupt? Are all police racist? Would all police just shoot you? No. But you're categorizing all of them. You want them dead. You said it. It's in your chance. And we're supposed to trust you? And here's the idea. They're quitting. When people are not appreciated, they leave. How about the cement, the sidewalk you walk on, the car you drive on? 87% of that was built by men. How about the power alignment that goes out there before hurricanes, during hurricanes, and after hurricanes, see that you've got your power back, no matter how mean-spirited, nasty, bitter, acrimonious, despicable you are? They see you get electricity. Do you ever thank them? Or you're incapable of thanks because you're incapable of ever recognizing your own deficiencies. And that's a lot of people today. 92% of those are men. How about the crane operator that no high-rise can be built without him? 96% are men. How about the highway worker that's working out there? Right now in Texas today, it's 105 degrees ambient, and it's humid. So it's like 112 degrees. They're working today. Yeah, 85% are men. How about the garbage collectors? Now, there's a job for highly educated Caucasian women who are leading much of the woke generation. What, they won't do that. It's beneath them. That's for a different class. That's for the untouchables in India. Oh, or the working class in America. No appreciation. And 87% are men. How about the construction worker? You wouldn't have any place to live without them. But don't show appreciation. Don't show any humility. Don't show any grace. 90% are men. So the next time you hear someone say, well, men and women are indistinguishable, there is no such thing as a man or woman. Okay, well, if there's no such thing, then let's see that 90% of all women become loggers. and plumbers. But we won't. You see, this is the game that is played. And it's a bad game, and it's destructive. How long are these people who are denied any respect, shown that they're even human, how often will they take abuse or indifference? And we've seen this for a long time. It just didn't start. Now let's go to Professor Hansen and give his views. Again, you can call in afterwards and agree or disagree with him. But I want you to hear what he has to say about the people who control everything they can in your life. And right now these same people just bought the largest private piece of property in California, $1 billion, to build their dream city. Are you going to be invited? No, of course not. Now, of course, all the people they hate and despise and loathe and deny any virtue at all the things I just mentioned just now, they'll be hired to come in and do all the work to make their perfect utopian city, which will be a smart city. And interesting, when they showed the first artist renditions of it, it wasn't these massive skyscrapers. It was kind of a quaint town look. But it'll be fully automated, run by artificial intelligence. So the running of this city is by artificial intelligence. The building of the city is by people they despise. Wow, how far we have come, or not. Let's go to his clip.
Our elite have these theoretical ideological agendas, and it's also predicated on sort of a Soviet idea that for us to be true revolutionaries, we have to be exempt from the consequences of our ideology. So if I'm John Kerry, I need a private jet. That's the only way I can stop global warming. If I want to have teachers' unions and I have to have my kid in a private school. If I want to have 30 cents a kilowatt hour power, I've got to live on Montecito where it's 70 degrees year round. If I have to say to people, we're going to be inundated pretty soon because of global warming and our coastal properties will be underwater, if I'm Barack Obama, I still get to have Martha's Vineyard estate and a new place in Hawaii. So this is kind of a Versailles wealthy left group that play act like Marie Antoinette, and they dress up in peasant garb because they can, and they're wealthy and they're privileged. And so that explains a lot of what's happened. And the other idea is that we're creating the Davos class, the Great Reset group. They're basically agnostics and atheists, and they have lost any idea that the degree to which you act as a human in this lifetime affects your soul. And it's what Socrates said, that songs are everywhere, but they come into reality when you have an instrument to play them. But if you break your lyre, or you break your horn, it doesn't mean the song disappears. We have a soul. It's manifest only because we have a body for a short time. But if you don't believe that, and they don't, they're secular humanists, then every single issue right now is all that matters. It's not whether you lie. It's not whether you're a good person in terms of traditional, say, just take one example, Christian morality. It's whether you were right on the issue of global warming. You were right on the issue of critical race theory. You were right on this radical. And what is the agenda? It's a radical equality of a result. If you sum up the woke movement today, in every aspect, environmental, social, cultural, economic, it is that any inequality anywhere in the Western world can be attributed to some sort of exploitation. It doesn't matter about a person's individual circumstances, whether they're aggressively a workaholic or inert or lazy, or whether they have good genes or bad genes, or whether they have a big inheritance or whether they have a bad back. All the millions of things that we can't control. And the tragic view. So we say to ourselves, we want a quality of opportunity. Everybody gets an equal shot, and we'll try to help people that have disadvantages. But no, it's that person is not like that person. I'm anointed to adjudicate on the back end. I'm going to have an equality of result, and I need power to do a lot of tough stuff. And this is the motto of everybody from Pol Pot to Stalin to Mao. Wow. And that's what they want to do. They want the power so they can determine everybody's life. You've got your air conditioner on too much. A poor person in Fresno doesn't have that. He doesn't have that. So I'm going to take that away from you. Yeah.
But I'll keep mine going.
Yes.
And I'm going to go out and buy some carbon credits somewhere with some shonky scheme.
They always think of that, don't they?
Yeah, I'd probably have one of the highest greenhouse gas footprints of anyone on the planet. My
kind of
personal flying alone is gigantic. I'm paying a company that actually, at a very high price, can pull a bit of carbon out of the air and stick it underground. And so I'm offsetting my personal emissions.
Nobody should live in America more than 1,500 square feet, but I have 20,000 square foot homes. But I have had the carbon offsets. That's what they do. They dream up these things. I feel like they're creatures at Versailles, and they're very dangerous. And the left has conceded that the agenda that they embrace is ideological, and there's no compromise. Pete Buttigieg said that. He said, these prices are hard and they're difficult for you, but they're valuable because they're going to make fossil fuels unaffordable. They don't care about the misery that will entail thousands, millions of American families. But my point is, if you tell middle-class people you're not going to be able to afford to fill up your truck at $7 for diesel fuel, or you're not going to turn on your air conditioning because it's a sin and we're going to make it 30 kilowatt, and you're going to be on that forklift at 18 and you're going to pay taxes for this guy with a gender studies major at Stanford on his loan forgiveness. You're playing with fire with going after them, and then you keep calling them semi-fascist. So if you stop and think a minute, the President of the United States, between 2009 and 16, Barack Obama said these people clung to their guns. He just ridiculed them. Joe Biden has called them chumps and dregs. Hillary Clinton said they were irredeemables and deplorables, and she made fun of them in West Virginia. You know, coal's going to be, we're going to wipe out your livelihood. The FBI, members of the FBI say, how do we stop this president? Or Peter Strzok says, I went into Walmart and it smelled like Trump people. Or a CNN reporter says, I went to a rally and I had more teeth than everybody in this rally. If you marry that with an agenda that makes it impossible for people to have upward mobility, and you articulate your hatred toward them, and you call them, if you're the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and you say that you're exploiting their white rage, or you're the Secretary of Defense, and you say that you're going to go in the ranks, and you're going to find out who are all these racists, but you bring no data. So when you go after them, you said, well, how long will they take it? They're playing with fire. Well, they already have. Their recruitments in the U.S. Army are down 45%. And the Reagan Library just did a poll, and they asked people, do you have confidence in the U.S. military? It used to be 85%. It was less than 50%. And the U.S. Air Force Academy is not getting that. It has a recruitment crisis about applicants. The applications have gone down, but especially the applications that qualify of kind of people they want. So we're starting to see people say no. We have a kind of a rejectionist half the country. It wasn't just that they're not going to Disneyland or they're not watching the Super Bowl or NBA. They're not joining the military. They're saying no, and that's half the country. And that was the left always operated on the premise that they were the critical intellectual elite, and they would look at the system and they would poke holes in it, but was always the assumption that the system was there, that there was always some guy fracking oil, there was always some guy perched up on 150th floor washing windows, there was always a guy to fix their car, and that's how they existed. But when they take power, and they destroy the energy industry, and when they destroy the military, and when they destroy the reputation of the FBI, there's no there anymore. And so the people who kept the country running and allowed these people to be professors and lawyers and media critics, they're the frill. They're the hair and the nails. They're not the muscles and the organs of the organism. And when you start attacking those people that make the country run, and it's not just white, I'm not saying white, it's everybody of the middle and working muscular classes. They warred on them. And when you don't want them in rebellion, because we saw that during the COVID shutdown. and half of them stopped working. They couldn't work. Their businesses were destroyed. And then the other half were the only people that kept the country running. The Amazon delivery, the guy who kept, he was still irrigating the grape vineyard, the guy who was still out there welding. So that's who kept the country going. We all can't sit in our house terrified of COVID, live by Zoom, and have somebody knock on the door with our dinner and our Amazon delivery. That takes real people. And if you offend those people, as we're doing, the real revolutionary thing in the United States now is the left was so obsessed with race. It's almost that their hubris brought on nemesis, because now what's happening, you're starting to see a subtle but definite trend that people who the left calls non-white feel there's a war against them. If you're a Mexican-American painter, or you have 10 people working in your electrician business, you don't want people going into your diocese and disrupting it over transgendered issues. You don't want critical race theory. You don't want somebody playing the knock-up game where they walk up to somebody and hit them in the head on a street in New York and they're out the same day. So they're offending those classes, and they're creating a new political reality of class, I think, is starting to slowly reassert itself. It's very ironic because these people are not empirical, they're ideologues. I think everybody knew that Stalinism had failed by 1935 or 36, earlier during the Great Famine. It didn't matter. He didn't change. Mao failed. But the ideologue does not care. We saw that with the Virginia pushback against the left. They didn't care. They doubled down on critical race theory. So we in California have no forest management because we felt that it was empowering timber companies. You know, very careful, conservative trimming of dead trees and logging. So what do? We have these huge fires, these biblical fires, and they put more fossil fuel emissions into the air than cars do. But they don't care because it's ideologically correct to have a particular forest management problem. And so that's where we are. We've created a very wealthy, elite, protected class, and they have controls of the influence in the Western world. And by that I mean the books that are published, the media, social media, network news, PBS, NPR, Foundation, all of it. And they have a huge megaphone, and they have the money. The wealth. If you look at the Fortune 400, these are not ancient fortunes based on manufacturing or assembly or oil or mining or gas or transportation. They're finance, investment, insurance, high tech, bio, media. And they're very left-wing people. They have a global market. They're very wealthy. They're ideological. And they have an agenda that they feel is good for us. This is their religion. As atheists and agnostics, they feel we're going to convert these people. We don't want to do it by the sword if we can avoid it. But they're going to do what's good for them. And we know what it is. We've seen their visions. It's all of us are going to live in high rises, and we're going to go to a belt around a city on mass transit. We're going to give up our individual cars. We're going to think a particular way. We're going to have a particular K-12 education, and we're going to be the perfect citizen according to them. And they don't believe in liberty. They don't believe in individual choice. They don't believe that individuals can make better decisions than they can as government. So they're very scary people, and they're not new in history. Every generation or two, they have a new face. If this was 1793, we'd be calling them Jacobins. If it was 63 or 68, maybe, in China, we would call them Maoist. After 1945 to 50 in the United States, we'd call them sympathizers with socialism or communism. So I don't know how we defeat them other than the way we've always defeated them. And that is a few people call them out and say, it doesn't work and we're going to oppose you. We have a better system, we have better values, and we care about people, and we're humanist. I don't think that they're anti-human, as you said. When AOC said that she didn't want children because of climate change, and when you tell the left that you can't have a society with a 1.3 fertility rate because you'll have a bunch of old people dependent on very few young people whose whole lives will be spent taking care of them. They don't care. that they like that. The fewer people, the less carbon imprint on the environment. So it's very sad because it's insidious. People with PhDs and JDs and MDs and MAs and BAs who are very glib can do a lot of damage. And as we get older, I'm not trying to be romantic or naive, but something about a person who works with their hands and they combine the mind with the body and they build or they mine or they harvest, they're grounded in reality. They know human limitations and they believe that the world is tragic and you try to do your best. And if you're not perfect, it doesn't mean you're not good.
Okay. I'd like your thoughts, please. 888-874-4888. Oh, and by the way, what are some of the things they've done just in the last 3 years? The power brokers, who are not experts in the things that they want to be considered, like Bill Gates, well, they told us we need masks now again. Maybe they should read the current issue, volume 256 of Ecotoxicological Environmental Safety. And this was just cited in the National Library of Medicine, the National Center for Biotechnology Information. And it says the following, quote, measuring the quality of harmful volatile organic compounds inhaled through masks. Well, and they used all masks. They were all volatile. But that's only one study. Another study also showed that the masks don't work. They just don't work. Well, you know, why don't we know that? Because they don't want us to know it. And have they given us a list of all the different people who've been permanently injured and died from taking the vaccines? No, they have not. They don't have such a list. In fact, they've stopped allowing toxic reactions to be recorded. Why is that? Because of the millions upon millions who've already had adverse effects. So first you deny the problem, it doesn't exist. If you don't see Rachel Maddow talking about it, but clearly it doesn't exist. But then the misinformation on the same source. So you're not telling us the problem, but you also told us, get the vaccine and you won't get infected, you won't affect other people. They were wrong. But in the process of being wrong, they were doubly wrong because then they condemned everyone else who didn't get the vaccine as being irresponsible. So actually it is the people who got the vaccine in the end who are shedding and ending up with over 90% of hospitalizations and deaths. Well, and they downplayed and denied natural immunity. Guess what? You should have natural immunity, which most people in the world today have. So they had their chance. We saw what they did. It was completely genocidal, and no one was held accountable, and probably won't be. By the way, just one thing I mentioned earlier, that Sean was the first one in 1973 to let me know about chakras. I didn't know anything about it, but chakras actually started back in the 1880s, and it entered the vernacular of non-Sanskrit in the 1920s. And so it was here, we just didn't know about it, at least those of us who had not been exposed to it. And I want to thank Mitchell Raven for sharing some information on the evolutionary scale of psychological and spiritual attributes and functions of the chakra. More people should become involved in understanding energy healing. That's a part of it. Now, before we go to our next clip, I want to see in New York, let me know the moment we have some calls. I'd like to take them. But in the interim, I'm just going to offer you something special today. And the reason that this special is being offered is because a lot of people were not able to get into or qualify for our anti-aging program, which we're still in, by the way. We still have another, I think, 4 weeks. One group is finished. They're getting their blood work up done this week. Then they're done. The other group still has a month. So I'm going to give you just one of the things that might be able to be of interest and positive reinforcement of your awareness of anti-aging. It's the ultimate anti-aging formula. It's 120 vegan capsules. Also with this, you're going to get overcoming fatigue, a natural approach, because a lot of people have problems with fatigue and don't know why. So this will help that. It's an award-winning documentary. And also reversing arthritis and pain naturally. So when you put together pain and fatigue, you're dealing with the number one and two causes of doctor visits in the United States. And I haven't offered these. There's over a 60% discount today. But what's in this supplement that makes it so important? Well, vitamin C, 500 milligrams. Vitamin E, 200 units. Vitamin B1. Vitamin B2, vitamin B6, 15 milligrams. Vitamin B3, 3.2 milligrams. Pantothenic acid, vitamin B12, 500 micrograms. Folic acid, 400 micrograms. Biotin, calcium, magnesium, L-carnosine, turmeric, resveratrol, 100 milligrams. Coenzyme Q10, 100 milligrams. NADH, 20 milligrams. Pine bark extract, PPQ. So these are the superstars. You got eight superstars: PPQ, pine bark, NAD, coenzyme Q10, resveratrol, turmeric or curcumin, L-carnosine, magnesium, folic acid, B12, and vitamin C and E. So you're getting all these in one supplement, a vegan supplement. All right? So I won't tell you what it does, but every single ingredient in there was selected based upon my looking at the scientific studies and saying what can benefit the body. All right? So I don't make claims. I'll simply say, if you're interested in your health as I am, and I take this every day, you might want to start by looking at your lifestyle, your behavior, your stress, the quality of the liquids you drink, and then add this in there. It's just a part of that. This is very important. And it's the anti-aging formula. And how do you get it? Simple. You can call Neil in the Vitamin Closet Monday to Saturday or go in and visit him noon to 8 o'clock at 646-926-5430. Or call our main number at 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or just order online for yourself. Again, you're getting better than a 60% discount. It should cost you $200. It's costing you $75. With lots of good information that everybody could benefit from. But do you know someone that couldn't use energy awareness and help them with pains, and especially arthritis? Well, it's there to help you. 877-627-5065. Now let's see if we have anyone online. Do we have any calls?
No, Gary.
Okay, then we're going to finish our program today. I wish people were calling in because I'd like to hear from you and hear your perspectives. I'm going to play one more clip. And this clip is about, this is about why young generations have so much more mental illness than older ones, with Dr. Nicholas Carderis.
Riley Gaines, who's been great speaking out about men posing as women, trying to get into women's sports, she found this video on TikTok, I think, and she posted a video of herself eating cereal next to it. She's like, okay, listening. But listen, I'm going to play the soundbite so you can hear what the young woman Riley was reacting to is saying about herself. To me, there is no other explanation for this than life entirely online. Okay, listen.
I'm Cody, pronouns E-M, air, airs, or Z-Zen, zers, or really any neo-pronouns that aren't Z-Her-Hers. I am a white, transmasculine, femme, non-binary, temporarily, mostly able-bodied, neurodivergent, obsessive, compulsive, chronically ill, culturally Jewish, Unitarian Universalist, non-monogamous, demi-low-romantic, gray demi-bisexual, survivor of acute and complex trauma, millennial, and cat parent in mental health recovery.
Oh my God. I'm sorry, Nicholas, but what is that? What explain that.
Yeah, it's crazy. In clinical terms, it's insane.
Yeah,
we're seeing a lot of that. So, you know, it's interesting when you look at the psychiatric metrics of the different generational cohorts, the younger the cohort, you know, as we go down from baby boomer to Gen X to millennial to Gen Z, the more psychiatric unwellness we have. So the most mentally healthy people are in their 50s and 60s. And as you go down the ladder, more depression, anxiety, suicidality, self-harm, all the psychometrics spike as you get younger and younger, which is correlating with their immersion in this sort of digital world. When I wrote my first book, Glow Kids, in 2016, part of, you know, I showed all the clinical research that showed about some of the impacts of technology on children and teens. And it was really pulling back the curtain on the playbook of big tech that they've made these devices and platforms habit-forming by design. So first it was saying, we're getting addicted to our devices, which at the time in 2016, I got a lot of pushback from. When I wrote in the New York Post, digital heroin, people thought, what, these can be addicting? Well, now we know, asked and answered, these devices are addicting. My most recent book, Digital Madness, we look at what is the price of that addiction? What is it doing to the mental health of an entire generation or entire society? And so what we're seeing is that as we continue to have our love affair with technology and increase our screen immersion, we're getting more and more psychiatrically unwell. And a lot of that I ascribe to what some of my colleagues have ascribed to also, a social contagion effect. So if you're a little bit lost or not loving your life or feeling a little bit drifting, and you start going down rabbit holes of different platforms, whether it's 4chan or social media or Instagram. And I've written about this because a lot of our clients in Austin fall into this category, might be going through a little mild depression. But then if you fall into a rabbit hole of, there's whole communities for borderline personality disorder, dissociative identity disorder, gender dysphoria. And we know from social learning theory that we, you know, monkey see, monkey do, we begin to emulate our social groups. Well, now our social groups for most young people are digital. They're online. So, you know, if you run with wolves, you become a wolf.
More on that on an upcoming program. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you very much for listening, and share it if you find it of value. Have a nice day, everyone.